Good evening. I'd like to call the September 18th, 2012 meeting of Tompkins County Legislature to order. Roll call of members. I knew that. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Sorry about that. Now, roll call of members. Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
He's here.
He's here.
And Mr. Shinagawa is here. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Ferreira has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
All right. I will be reordering the motions to try to accommodate staff who are here. But there are a lot of staff attached to a lot of motions, so somebody is going to have to be more patient than somebody else. I have a first legislative... privilege of the floor from the public, and I have Fran Spadafora signed up.
Good evening, everyone.
It's not on? Oh, okay, it's on. I'm Fran Spadafora Manzella, the call center manager at 211 Tompkins Courtland. We're a community services helpline and a program of the Human Services Coalition. I just wanted to briefly let you know that we have republished our food and shelter cards that you may remember from a few years ago. And we just wanted to let you know the food and shelter cards are targeted towards the city of Ithaca and the 8 rural communities, and they're targeted to people who might be at risk of food scarcity or homelessness or other special needs. And we want to let you know that we have them. We have visited the Health and Human Services Committee already and let you know, Kathy, our executive director, visited and distributed some cards. We've distributed them to local police and fire and emergency people and the Homeless and Housing Task Force, but we want to let you know that we have them here, and I had planned on distributing them to you through the Tompkins County government mail if you would like some. We have a number of them, except for we're running out of Enfield and Caroline. But just wanted to let you know they're laminated, they fold, and they're really good pocket guides for people who don't have access to the Internet as many of us do. So thank you for giving me this time to let you know, and you'll be receiving some in your inner office, Tompkins County mail. And we have funded this because we did get a grant from the Service League before they ended their service, and also we took some of the funds out of our copying and publications, which the county funds. So thank you very much for helping to fund this. It's a really important resource and a very popular thing with human service agency personnel to distribute to their clients in need. Thank you. Thanks very much, Fran. Herb, now's our slot for municipal officials. Would you, you're on the agenda in a little bit for your comprehensive plan. Would you like to talk for a few minutes about general town business? Okay. All right. Thank you. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Anyone? Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a reminder that this coming Friday, the 21st, is the watch fire in Lansing at Myers Point. And any of you that have a moment and would like to stop, you'd be more than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Jim, then Carol.
Thank you. I want to remind people about the United Way of Tompkins County, Stephen E. Garner
Day of Caring Day, food personal care items and school supplies drive. There are brand new green recycling bins from solid waste all around in the county. And the bins will be picked up 11 a.m. Friday, September 21st, and delivered, I believe, to Stewart Park, where we'll all be gathered together and given out to food pantries and community organizations. So it's a United Way function that begins the campaign for 2013, I believe. So, and the county is heavily involved in it. And many offices throughout the county building.
And we have a bin right here next to Karen's desk, so everybody can remember to bring some things in. Thank you, Jim. Carol and then Nate?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention briefly and pass around a report. While I was in New York, I had the occasion to attend a press conference with a release of a report about the juvenile justice system, called Families Unlocking Futures, Solutions to the Crisis in Juvenile Justice, put out by this organization called Justice for Families. These are organizations formed nationally of local chapters, families whose children have been caught up in the juvenile justice system, families who provided support to each other and learned how to both assist their kids and support each other, with research support by this organization called the Data Center that helps community organizations and governments do their own research in a way that doesn't just drop into a community, study it, and publish an academic paper and move on, but helps them to figure out what's the kind of information that might be helpful and what are the ways in which we can then use that information for our own purposes. And so this report uses both statistics chosen by that community and case studies to present very interesting material, photographs, case studies about the ways in which kids who maybe have done nothing more than our kids have done and gotten into a little bit of trouble in high school have ended up in a chain of the justice system in ways that have been harmful to them and to their families, and what are the things that these families have been able to do to get them out of the system and be more productive. It's a very well done report. There are interesting graphics that portray a lot of information in short order, and then there's a blueprint for how we in our local communities can try to address these issues within our own systems and hopefully come to better outcomes for both the public spending, the public dollars, the communities, particularly of color and poor kids who end up caught in this system. That benefit to our entire community. So I'll pass it around and then leave a copy back for people to look at.
Thank you, Carol. Nathan.
Yeah, I know everybody's been probably following the news today about Mitt Romney's comments, and I'm not going to get into the political side of it, but I do just want to clarify what those actual different statistics mean. And so one of the things that's being talked about is this number of 46% of Americans that don't pay federal income tax. And what that means is that there are 46% of Americans that don't pay a federal income tax, and many of those individuals are, in fact, the elderly who receive special tax credits and also don't get any taxes on their Social Security. It also includes people that are making below the poverty level, and it also includes families of four making less than $46,000 due to tax credits that were actually introduced during the Bush years through the Bush tax cuts. And so the key thing to remember is that of those 46% of Americans that, quote, don't pay federal income taxes, they do pay sales tax and other state and local taxes. And as we know, especially as county legislators, those taxes are particularly regressive. So I think one of the things that we need to be aware of is that as people are talking, this debate goes forward about this 46%, because it will probably be in the forefront over the news the next few weeks, is that it's important to remind people that it's not that those 46% don't pay taxes. It's that that 46% is not paying specifically federal income tax, and for a lot of reasons, and for a lot of times, very, very good reasons, because they're poor, they're looking for a job, they're students, they're the elderly, or they have children and are making a low wage or somewhere. So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Nate. Pam.
Actually, could I, Nathan, does that include the very, very wealthy who don't pay any income tax?
Oh, thank you, Pam, for letting me know about that. So there's also an economist named Bruce Bartlett, who was a advisor to both the Reagan and Bush White Houses. He also was a policy advisor to Ron Paul and Jack Kemp. And he did actually a study, I think it was about 6 months ago. It was in the New York Times. And in that, he talked about how there are Americans that make over $2.17 million a year. They are the top 0.1%. And it's about 3,000 Americans that do not pay federal income taxes either. And the reason why is because they're real estate investors, they're hedge fund managers, and they earn their income primarily through things like capital gains. And so there are a sizable number of Americans, especially when you look at their wealth and how much money they actually have, that also don't pay taxes at the very top. Thank you.
Thank you both. Mike?
Well, I just thought I'd mention a couple things about the County Civil War Commission. We had a wonderful encampment about 3 weeks ago in which we brought in reenactors who spent 2 days out at the Veterans Volunteer Facility on Elmira Road. We had between 200 and 300 people come. They had an opportunity to talk directly with the folks who came to put on this demonstration. They got to hear the cannon shot off. They got to see the muskets fired. But we think that one of the things we did that tried to connect them with people who were actually a part of the Civil War was every person that came drew a name, had a sticker, and wore that while they were there of one of the Civil War soldiers or one of the Civil War nurses or one of the troops who were soldiers, too, from the colored brigade that was raised predominantly from Tompkins County of over 30 members of that regiment came from Tompkins County. They learned a little bit about each person, the person that they had the badge for, when that person enlisted, how old he was or she in the case of nurses, what battles they were in, whether they made it through the war or not, whether they were wounded, whether they were sick, whether they deserted, whether they were discharged honorably at the end. And I think people really like that, particularly the children. Our library put on reading and music for the children at this event, and they appreciated that. The Sons of Union put on a pancake breakfast and a chicken barbecue that people were able to attend. It was a great event. And then last night, although Marshall Lynch and I and Frank were all dutifully here where we were supposed to be, there was a great lecture held at the Borg Warner Room at the Tompkins County Public Library. David Klutz came in and talked about the 137th Regiment that was raised mostly in Tompkins County in August of 1862, just 150 years ago, after President Lincoln's call for, I think, 70,000 men at that point. And then, just so everyone knows, our next event is the 30th of September, and that is there will be a showing of the movie Glory. Many of you have probably seen that. Some haven't. But here's your opportunity to see it again on the big screen at Cinemopolis, where that'll be at 1:30. That's a Sunday, 1:30 to 4. There'll also be a discussion afterwards about it, and admission will be by donation. So please come. Please bring some friends and see a great movie and learn a little bit more about the Civil War.
Thanks very much, Mike. Peter?
I have a couple of things I wanted to say. One, just responding to what Nathan said about the 47%. I read something I thought was sort of interesting in the Times also. Several people commented in the Times today on that article. And one person pointed out that low-income person who is not married and doesn't have any children and is as dependents that earns a minimum wage, has a minimum wage job, pays 7% Social Security, and then his employer pays 7% Social Security, and in the normal economic way of accounting for things, that the employer's tax is considered a tax on the individual itself, since it's money that's taken away from, due to that individual, it's passed on to the federal government. And therefore, that minimum wage single person pays a greater percentage of his earnings to the federal government than does Mitt Romney, who's at 13.9%. So I thought that was sort of interesting. I mean, that sort of puts it in context. But what I wanted to talk about, which will take me a little bit more time to talk about than that, I've had considerable amounts of email from constituents regarding colored shoulders on Ellis Hollow Road. And they asked that I respond to them, and I wrote one of them to say, and wanted to have a conversation with me. I said, it's really hard to have a conversation over email. I said, so let me tell you what my take is on this, and you can turn the TV on if you'd like at, around this time and hear me. So the Ellis Hollow program started before I joined the legislature, so I never heard about it. I never heard the arguments for it or against it. When I came here, it was in progress. And what happened, my memory, is what happened, like in many projects, the prices come in more than expected, and as a result, the project has to be trimmed in one way or another. The project originally contained a funding for a rather expensive kind of colored shoulders that are permanent because the color is actually part of the aggregate. It isn't a paint. And as a result, it lasts as long as the aggregate, so that there's very little maintenance in that that kind of colored shoulder. But the primary cost of it is expensive, and it costs more than $100,000. Then what happened was that the project on more essential parts of the road spent more money than expected, to the tune of around $100,000, and we could not put in the colored shoulders. Several people felt very strongly about the colored shoulders. Why did they feel strongly? They felt strongly because the biggest complaint that most of us hear from our constituents is speeding. I personally hear much more about speeding than I do about taxes or about anything else. Speeding and volume of traffic. It's a major concern. And there was a belief by several people in the legislature that putting coloring the shoulders will reduce the amount of speeding. There aren't a lot of ways of controlling speeding, but that was is often used as a way of doing that. And that's why the colored shoulders were put on, to respond to concerns of people on Ellis Hollow Road that refurbishing the road, which tends to have cars go faster, that will be compensated for by the speed calming effects of the shoulders. Then, okay, we didn't do the shoulders. We had a question, what were we going to do? Well, there were many of us sitting around the table, and I was one of them, who felt a promise is a promise, that we promised those people on Ellis Hollow Road that we would have colored shoulders, and that we ought to spend another $100,000 of our own local funds in order to put the colored shoulders on. We voted on that, and it lost. Now, in the course of that debate, there were a lot of people who claimed that they didn't think colored shoulders worked. I was neutral on it. I didn't know anything about it. I asked to read the literature. I read the literature, and honestly, I was not convinced that the literature was very strong. That there were arguments that said it did, and there were other things that said it didn't. And what concerned me was that the most compelling evidence came from Europe, not from the United States, and this is a psychological effect, so you can't necessarily translate what drivers will do in European countries to Americans. When it lost, we found that we had approximately $17,000 left in the fund that we could do something with. And the question arose between several of us, and could we answer our obligation to the Ellis Hollow residents by putting painted shoulders in, which are not as attractive and don't last as long, and we could do that for $17,000. I was particularly enthusiastic about that because I said, that's wonderful. That offers us an opportunity to find out whether or not colored shoulders work. Not only will that affect our decisions on Ellis Hollow Road, but it may affect our decisions on Pine Tree Road and Hanshaw Road and other kinds of roads where people are calling for us to reduce the traffic. To me, that was a godsend $17,000, because it's not really difficult to do these calculations. You measure the speed before, you paint the shoulders, you measure it afterwards, and you can see whether cars go slower. That's what happened. There was nothing illegal about it. It was not necessary to get the legislature's vote to approve that, because that's our practice. Our practice is that as long as we stay within the budget, that the highway department has a right to change what they do with the money, to make adjustments. Those kind of adjustments are made constantly in all projects. So I defend that $17,000 as the best thing that we could do to follow up to do what we promised to do for the residents of Ellis Hollow Road. And I think it will prove very valuable to us, not only to us, but other people around the country who have to make these same kinds of decisions. So I feel I personally have nothing to apologize for spending that money. I'm sorry it took so much time, but I did want to get that on the record.
Thanks very much, Peter. Carol?
Yeah. While we're on this topic, I want to thank Peter for speaking so eloquently. You tell us an eloquent story, and there's been a lot of press interest and public interest in these shoulders, of all of the road projects that we do. I mean, we always have a lot of interest in our road projects, but there's been a particular amount of interest in this, and we appreciate all of that. I want to make sure that people understand, if they go out to look at these particular shoulders in Ellis Hollow now, that the coloring is not complete. We are intending to test, and because we have before figures on the speed here, we will be able to obtain after figures. That wasn't necessarily true on some of our other projects. But if you go out and look at those shoulders now, a short distance has the full coloring. A longer distance, there was some problem with the applicator on the machine, so they laid down a certain amount of the paint, and they have to come back with another machine, and they will be doing that as the weather allows them to do so. We will be studying that. We will be getting some results. I also want to just mention, though, that we have been cautioned. I was cautioned just this afternoon by somebody that we will be able to make a judgment and get hard figures about the change in speed, potential change in speed, and maybe safety, the separation between the roadbed and the shoulders where you've got pedestrians and bicyclists. We'll be able to make a judgment call based on hard data for a road of that character. There was some concern expressed this afternoon that it won't necessarily tell us that we might have to do yet another experiment, if you will, in a zone that is already at lower speeds, or, for example, around a school. You know, there might be additional reasons to color a shoulder in other areas of the county that this test won't necessarily tell us anything about. So I was just cautioned about that. While we're on F&I, if you don't mind, because Herb is here, this is business we would normally do later, but I'm going to have to pull one of the resolutions that's on our agenda about, speaking of Hanshaw Road, It has to do with additional funding that we are going to be applying for. And I just wanted to make sure, Herb, that John Lampman or somebody else reached you this afternoon so that this isn't coming as new news. Herb was the one, I think, who had urged us to take advantage of some funding available for these safer routes to school funding, and we did respond to that. It has been through committee. We had an application ready to go, and we learned late this afternoon that because we already have some funding from the same pot of money, we cannot. I may botch this explanation, but there's a technical reason why we cannot apply for this additional $370,000 without starting from ground zero with the rest of the project, which we're not willing to do. So I'm going to be pulling that later. Thanks. I just didn't want you to hear it later, and you had sat here through part of the meeting and then didn't know. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Carol. Frank?
Are we still under privilege of the floor? Thank you. I'd like to ask your indulgence for just a moment, Madam Chair. I was listening to Nathan's description of what anecdotally was reported as candidate Romney's remarks, and I would ask that the clerk include verbatim the items that Mr. Shinagawa mentioned, so that if there's an opportunity, if you'll permit an opportunity, perhaps in the future, for anyone else on this legislature to perhaps offer any other comments. Had we known that was going to happen, perhaps we would have been better prepared to do it tonight. Thank
okay.
you.
So that's fine with Nate? Okay. Brian?
Listening to a couple of comments on the colored shoulders, I just feel compelled to say, again, for anyone that wants to be listening, a couple of things. One, we don't always make it a practice to, if there's money left over in a project, that we have to spend it. That's one. And we have not forgotten about the folks that, perception is everything. And some of the perception and some of the comments I have gotten was not negative towards that so much as, hey, there's other parts of the county that have roads, actual physical roads that need to be repaired. And, we haven't forgotten about that. I guess it remains to be seen if that's going to reduce speed. My guess is that it may a little bit. However, speed, we cause our own speed problems by fixing the roads. That's a beautiful road up there right now. It's very smooth. I was just on it yesterday. And I wasn't speeding. But in a way, we do cause our own problems by doing that, although we have to do that. And unfortunately, it puts a little more work, regardless where it is in the county. And we do have folks that, as part of their job, they enforce that sort of stuff. Personally, I didn't mind it, although being a golfer, I think the fairway is a little narrow. It's kind of tough to hit, whatever. But I do want folks to know that, we're trying our darndest to fix all of the roads. And, if you think that's somewhat of a frivolous spend, okay. We can argue that all day. We've already argued it long before today. But in light of the comments that were made, I needed to say that. So thanks.
Thanks, Brian. And I want to take a minute also. I've been criticized personally because that's my district. I live on that road. I didn't even know this was going to happen until Carol mentioned what the decision out of F&I at this body. I didn't know that it was being reconsidered. I didn't know that it was, we voted on it last summer. It failed. Thought it was done. So I had absolutely nothing to do with the reconsideration by the highway director and the committee. And I want to say we did look at, back when the community was working with John Lampman and the staff and Fisher consultants about
the design of the road. We talked about this as a colored shoulders as a traffic calming idea. They, I can't remember whether it was Fisher or staff, we looked for any research, you know, can, how do you know that it's, you know, that it's going to reduce speeds? The, as Peter said, there was some, a little bit of work done in Europe and I think one study in Florida, but nowhere where they fixed the road, had black shoulders and measured the speed, and then painted the shoulders and measured the speed. So nowhere where you actually had a comparison with the smooth road in both conditions of shoulder coloring. So the other studies really didn't answer the question at all. I mean, you couldn't compare the speed on the broken up road to the smooth road. And Brian, I will tell you that a number of people thought, you know, when we were designing the project, that we should pave the shoulders and let the travel lanes go to hell. So that would be the best kind of traffic calming. You know, I don't think that really works. But in any case, it's, you know, it's something that we did look into this back a few years ago, and there was just really no good data. And this is an opportunity to actually do that kind of study. And, you know, if it's effective, we can consider using it in the future. If it's not effective, then we don't even have to bother talking about it again. Jim, did I see your hand up?
You did. And I got some comments on this, and I know the staff is not going to care about it, but I think it's indefensible painting the roads. And frankly, I Googled not only just here, but yesterday, painting roads to reduce speed, and you can't find anything on the internet in askme.com or Google, except when it comes to bicycles. And you paint, you stripe roads, you change the color on the sides for bike paths and things and walking, but nothing to reduce the speed. So it's going to be a great experiment, but I'm not concerned about it because a couple of years of the weather around here and it's going to be a wonderful gray color anyway. And you know, I'm happy we fixed the road, but I want roads in Ulysses fixed, and mm-hmm. he wants roads in Groton fixed the same way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. Okay, anything else? Carol?
I just think we have to be cognizant of the fact that you probably can't fix up more than a few inches of road for $17,000. Joe, can you give us any off-the-cuff remembrance of how much per mile of road it
would
cost?
I was trying to stay
us?
Out of this.
You know,
it's a couple hundred thousand dollars a mile, usually.
If we could have done a mile of the of your road, Jim, or your road, Brian, for the $17,000 that was left in this budget, you know, maybe we would have tried to do it. But for that amount of money, it's road projects are much bigger, and we would love to be able to both bring everybody at 55 miles an hour from door to door and keep everybody's traffic in front of their houses down below 20 miles an hour. You know, we balance these things, and we come to as best a decision as we can. And anybody else who comments tonight, I'm going to make sure that your roads are splotchy in front of your houses. No, but I'm joking. It's, you know, it's not easy. And you know, our staff does the best they can with the dollars they've got and try to respond to those of us who had voted to proceed with the Ellis Hollow project there were swing votes that depended on trying to go ahead with the shoulder coloring. So we'll try to be all things to all people as much as we can.
All right. I've got Leslyn, Brian, Jim, Peter. And I'm hoping we don't have to repeat things that have been said, but Leslyn hasn't even had a shot yet. So
trying to jump ship like Joe. I'm staying out of this.
All right.
Well, you know, some more fun things. September 15th through October 15th, Latina Heritage Month is celebrated. And in honor of Latina Heritage Month, there are a number of activities, but I want to highlight one happening on the Commons, City of Ithaca, celebrating your Latin roots. It's a Latin Roots Festival this Saturday, the 22nd, from 11 to 7 p.m. So enjoy some part of homecoming, Cornell campus, and then come on down for the Latin Roots celebration the following week, because this body would not meet before then, is the Apple Harvest Fest here in downtown Ithaca, one of several festivals that are hosted by the Downtown Ithaca Alliance and the businesses downtown. Great event, and a part happening at the same time as Apple Harvest Fest is the First People's Festival, something I want to highlight, which is a celebration of Native American culture that occurs in DeWitt Park from 10 to 5:30 p.m. on the 29th of September in DeWitt Park. It is put on by the Multicultural Resource Center and lots of hard work by its director, Audrey Cooper, so shout out to her. Again, Apple Harvest Fest, September 28th through the 30th, so go on down there and get your apple bread and apple pie and every other good things that apples can make. How's that for lifting the spirits of everybody?
And the next boxing match is when?
I got some people around the table I'm inviting to that match. People who jump ship. I'll let you know.
Thank you, Leslie. Maybe you've gotten to change the subject, but I don't go back to Brian. Yeah, maybe not.
Just have a word vague.
Well, I didn't ask for us to go down this road tonight. And
with Paige shoulders?
I should probably just pass. Maybe I'll just pass, and we'll take it up another time, maybe.
Okay. Jim?
And I, too, will pass.
Peter?
Boy, I wish I was as noble as those two, but I'm not.
That's what you
Wow. I didn't hear that. Just a quick answer to Jim about asking ask.com. In the Pine Tree Road project, I went and talked to someone at Cornell about speeding and what was written about it, and I was given a document that was called, it was the Bible of Speeding, even more complete than Google. And colored shoulders are mentioned in it. It's not a big, it doesn't get a whole chapter, but it is mentioned as one of the ways to do traffic calming.
Well, if this works, we might actually get, you know, a new piece in the literature. And so, you know, that's always a goal. All right, Leslyn, and back to Jim.
I apologize. I forgot one very, very important thing. And it is the United Way Day of Caring this Friday, the 21st. I'm sure most people know, but I do want to ask folks, they certainly welcome donations of food supplies, non-perishable, so please don't bring your lettuce, canned goods, hygiene products, all sorts of things, and welcome volunteer opportunities to help sort in and stock those. They are there at the park, I think, from somewhere around 9 in the morning. There's a gadabout bus that will be stationed somewhere on Cornell campus within the next week or so, still collecting supplies. So the food that is collected, the supplies that are collected, distributed to our food pantries in the Food Bank of the Southern Tier. So I ask all of you to please consider, you know, getting some goods and bringing it down to Stewart Park. It occurs at Stewart Park on Friday morning, the 21st, for the United Way Day of Caring, the Steve Garner United Way Day of Caring. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. And Jim?
No.
All set. Okay.
I will let other people be right.
Google. That's yes. Noble. Thank you, Jim. Yeah. All right. I'd like to bring Herb up if you're still awake. And, you know. Hi, Herb, Town of Ithaca Supervisor. And we have on our desks your handout. I really appreciate your being here. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you, Martha. And Carol, thank you for bringing up the point about the Safe Routes to School grant. And I just wanted to, as an aside, say County staff, especially the Public Works Department, did a great job of working on that proposal, and I provided some of the information from our previous project on Warren Road. So a thank you, even though it didn't work out because there's a technicality involved with not being able to get the money. So for the comprehensive plan, when Martha and I talked about this, I had immediately asked Sue Ritter, our director of planning, to come and make the presentation, but unfortunately she has a conflict with another meeting tonight, so I am the poor substitute. But what I did is I stole a bunch of pages from a wonderful presentation she made in a public meeting to introduce the comprehensive plan to residents. And it's just to give you a flavor. It's not supposed to be comprehensive. I just wanted to give you something to remind you that it's on our website, the entire plan. And if you go to the website, I would urge you, if you have no time to really spend on it, read the first six pages. That will give you an idea of where we're headed in the town of Ithaca should the town board approve the comprehensive plan. And then the next 41 pages really fleshes that out. And we put all of the information, it will be a couple hundred page document, but we put all of the other information in the appendix. So if you're a real data wonk or a policy person, you can look back there to get all the backup. We wanted to have it short and sweet in the beginning so that people would read it and get the idea of where we think probably the town of Ithaca is heading. So we finished the draft in July. We've asked for comments, and the comments are due now. And then after a couple of weeks of reviewing all the comments, we'll turn it back to our comprehensive plan committee. And after that, it'll go to the town board and begin the process of the town board reviewing it and the legal process of adoption. So let me just mention some of the things that will hopefully entice you to read a little bit more about. This is about a 15 to 20 year outlook. And what we did in order to get information, we did a survey of our residents, and we contracted with Cornell to do that, so it's a scientifically valid survey. We then had several community meetings at Town Hall. We went out to the neighborhoods, met in every neighborhood of the town to get input, and then we did focus groups meetings, where we invited people we thought were interested in housing, transportation, energy, et cetera, and got their input. So what we've learned from this is that residents value our open space and our nearby urban amenities. That's what ties us to kind of the city, because a lot of the urban amenities are right next door in the city. In addition, people value our state parks, the Cuga Lake, our waterfalls, our nature trails, our farms, and our access to local farm products, and our parks and trails. And to sort of emphasize that desire to maintain open space, we have this little graph that shows that 67% of the town of Ithaca is forest, meadow, brush, or agricultural. So we're very much a town of open space. Only 19% is used for residential purposes. But we have worked very hard in the past for our conservation zones, our agricultural zones, and we now realize we're going to have to focus our attention a little bit more on development. I put in a little graph because people are sometimes surprised about a couple of things about the town of Ithaca. One is our total number is now 20,000. For comparison purposes, the city of Ithaca is 30,000. So you can see that we're somewhat comparable in terms of population. And if you throw in the students, you get a little different percentage-wise of year-round residents. What also surprises people is our distribution within the town. The biggest part of our town is not East Hill, which is almost fully built out and what we tend to think of as being very dense. It's South Hill. But you don't see a lot of the South Hill residents because they're off in developments, off 96B, off the side roads. But that's where the majority, the biggest part of our residents live. East Hill is not far behind. But where we have the least population by far is West Hill. We only have half of the residents in on West Hill as we do in either of the other two hills. So it's a very small part right now of our residential population. Well, what do these residents that we just talked about want? Well, they want services nearby. They want sidewalks. They want transit availability. They want housing options. They want housing affordability, which is, of course, part of the housing option. And then we came to the conclusion that our zoning isn't working. So we're going to have a completely different zoning should this comprehensive plan pass. That's the next step of this process, is to totally redo our zoning, and it'll look very different from what we have now. What we want for new neighborhoods in the town, and we are proposing a couple new neighborhoods for West Hill, but it'll be a couple of neighborhoods that are is off 96, will have its own interior road to try to keep the interior traffic at least away from 96 and 79, and it'll be compact development, much higher density than we're used to in the town of Ithaca. We'll have more housing options, both in prices and in types of housing. It'll be pedestrian-oriented. It'll be less auto-dependent, and it'll be a mixed use. That is, we will try to have both residential use, but mixed in there some small-scale commercial, which is going back to more the traditional village model and not the type of zoning we now have in the town of Ithaca. That's for new development. For our current development, we've got some problems. These were built back in the 50s and 60s. We don't have any sidewalks. We don't have transit facilities. We don't have any nearby services. So everybody is dependent on vehicles. And somehow we've got to go back and retrofit some of those places. And that's part of what you're seeing in the Northeast with sidewalks on Warren Road, hopefully a sidewalk on Hanshaw Road when the road is rebuilt. And that's part of the more complete streets type initiative that we're trying to work toward. So what you'll find in the plan is we've identified five areas that we're going to focus on particularly. One is West Hill, and that we hope to have a traditional neighborhood development emphasis, and we'll have that those new neighborhoods I talked about. On in Inlet Valley, that's that area from Buttermilk Falls State Park along Route 13 to the border with Danby and Newfield. We want to really rework that if we can, because it's a gateway to the town, it's a gateway to the city, and right now it looks pretty crummy. And we'd like to improve that. And we see that as a residential mixed-use area focusing on a lot of agriculture and some agricultural enterprises that are now setting up on Route 13 in that area. On South Hill, right now, you'll see a lot of redevelopment of the Danby Road, King Road area. And again, we see that as traditional neighborhood development, creating more of a little town center right at that intersection. And in all of these areas, we're going to continue to have the heavy emphasis on agricultural and conservation protection that we've had in the past. We split up East Hill into two sections. One is the southeast, and we'd like to see redevelopment of East Hill Plaza. And we'd like to see a lot more residential development there. We see this as the prime area where we can get people who can live and then walk to their place of employment, which is, of course, Cornell University. And that's why we're so interested in the Pine Tree Road development, the walkways and the other things, because we see the East Hill Plaza area is developing substantially, not necessarily commercially, although there probably will be a few more commercial enterprises there, but the introduction of a lot of residential, and we're dependent on Cornell for that. So we're hoping they'll put an emphasis on that. The other part of the East Hill is the northeast area, the Forest Home area. And we'd like to see a lot of infill there because that is where we already have heavy development, and that makes the most sense. We put a little emphasis on the Cornell Country Club. The reason for that is in our review of our land use in the town, we realized that that is a really important open space for us, for the town. And it's right on the border of Cayuga Heights. And that connects with the Cornell Country Club and provides a wonderful open space that residents use a lot for various purposes. And we want to protect that for the future, so we put a little emphasis on that. With that, I just end by saying we are trying to focus on smart growth. We will have hybrid zoning in the future. It won't be the Euclidean traditional zoning that we've had in the past. And our focus is on sustainability, sustainable neighborhoods, as well as our sustainable government. As some of you know, we've hired a sustainability planner to help us in that process. We've injected a lot of that sustainability thought throughout our comprehensive plan. With that, I'll end. Did I stay within 10 minutes?
I think so, yeah.
All right.
Thanks so much, Herb. Sure. Terrific. Any questions? Frank.
Herb, nice plan. Because of the types of developments, particularly in the five areas that you're concentrating on, where those might impact neighboring townships, is there a role that the town of Ithaca will play or the neighboring township will play in interacting with any of the development that's being planned, regardless of what it is, because it could be traffic impacts or whatever?
Yeah, very good point. In the introduction, we do talk about intermunicipal cooperation, and we do that a great deal with the city right now. In our comprehensive plan, we send a representative from our comprehensive plan committee to the city's comprehensive plan committee, and they in turn send a representative to us, and we also have a representative of Cayuga Heights on our comprehensive plan committee. So we've tried to integrate at least the city and the village of Cayuga Heights into the current planning. But you're right, for those projects that are very close to other municipal borders, we'll want to work very closely with others. And the plan has been sent to all the surrounding municipalities, I believe. If they haven't, we need to do that in order for them to participate in review.
Thank you.
Dooley, and then Peter.
Herb, I certainly agree that the Country Club and Cornell's are nice open space, but you almost made it seem as though the public is welcome to use those golf courses for something other than golf, and I don't think that's what you meant.
It is what I meant.
It is.
They're
okay.
Used a great deal for cross-country skiing in the fall. If you go out and take a look, you'll find tracks almost any time. And then, you're certainly right that the majority use during the warmer months is for golfing. But a lot of people will hike on those properties, and Cornell has been quite good about allowing that to happen. There's a lot of cross-country activity on the Cornell golf course running. But you're right. I mean, obviously, it's primarily designed for that. But our thought was, well, what happens if those golf courses cease to exist? We ought to plan for that. And what we've said is it would be good to have at least a majority of the land remain as open space if they should ever cease to exist. So we're just trying to be a little proactive in our thinking. Yeah.
Peter?
Just quick, Herb, at your demographic equality of East Hill and South Hill, how did you classify Eastern Heights? Was that East Hill or South Hill?
That's East Hill.
So even including that there's as many in South Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. Okay.
Yeah, it is a surprising statistic, but South Hill grew by far the fastest for the past several decades. Percentage-wise, West Hill is now growing a little faster percentage-wise, but they're starting at such a low level of numbers that they just don't have the numbers anywhere near the other two hills. And that's where that's where a lot of the open space is, and that's why there's some development pressure there now. But it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Will and then Carol.
Thank you, Martha. And thank you, Herb, for an excellent presentation. This process of this plan started way back when I was on the board. I'm thrilled to see it coming to fruition.
Both you and Peter, we'll blame you.
Thank you. So I am curious what, as a West Hill resident, I'm sure you are aware that even though we do not have the great massive population, we do have great concerns about traffic moving through, not only from within the town, but from without, and that has been a problem. And as I recall, our old plan did not call for any development of new roads. It was sort of given the existing. Is this new plan considering any difference, or just more people using the same existing system?
Yeah. The new interior road has been on the books for at least the past decade or so, because it was the right-of-way was gotten when Linderman Creek was built,
right.
And when there's a development on the other end whose name escapes me at the moment.
So this is the from Bundy?
Yeah. And so the right-of-way for the road was back then, so this actually probably goes back a couple of decades.
Yeah.
So it's just building around that road that's already there. And our planning committee, it has just completed a traffic study focusing on West Hill precisely to interject that information into our comprehensive planning. And what it basically says is, yeah, if there's full development, I mean the full development that you can imagine, it certainly will have some impact on traffic. But when you look at the other hills also, we already have an intersection on South Hill that's at the F standard, which is the lowest standard when you start to get some real big traffic problems. Under the full build-out of West Hill, you have one intersection that will get to the F standard should that happen. So it's comparable to one of other hills. And on East Hill, of course, even through Forest Home, you have numbers that are somewhat comparable to those that are coming off West Hill. So the numbers are perplexing because they're different from the perceptions. And so that's part of our challenge, is to have people understand that everybody in the town is suffering from traffic. There are thousands of people that go to the campuses every day, students and faculty and staff, and unless they live on campus, they pass through the town of Ithaca to get there. And that's our challenge, because we surround almost all the big employers in the town, and so it's a problem no matter where you go in the town. And I know people don't like to hear me say this, but it's not going to get any better. We can mitigate it as much as we can. We can try more mass transit. We can try to get people walking and taking bikes if we get the proper infrastructure in place. We can try to build housing closer to where people work, but the traffic will never get better. I just don't see it happening. We're in a growth county, and the town of Ithaca was only the fourth fastest growing town in Tompkins County in the last census. We were the fourth, not the first, the fourth. Other towns are growing faster than we are. So those are some of the challenges, and when people live out there, they're still going to come through the town of Ithaca to get to where they're going, either to shop or to go to work. So that's the challenge we have.
And I'm very glad that there's been cooperation with the city. I understand that the city is not nearly as far along in terms of their process. But as I'm sure you're aware, a lot of the problems happen as you leave the town and go into the city, and an infrastructure that really is not well set up for pedestrian or cyclists or whatever.
Yeah.
Within the city,
and
I don't know if there
right.
has been any discussion on how the town and city could work together to maybe fund some of these projects that need to be doing that are sort of beyond the scope of the city to do.
Yeah, but we really haven't talked about funding. We've certainly talked with the city about the timing of traffic lights, for example. Some of those are under the control of the state. We need to get the state to recognize that some of the intersections aren't working very well. And we, both the city and the town, need to be mindful that as development occurs, that some of the intersections, it's usually when it hits Route 13 or very close to it, the problems occur. And those are the things that are going to have to be looked at more carefully when new developments are proposed. But yeah, there will be traffic studies done on each and every development that's proposed to make sure we're not exceeding the thresholds that can be violated. One of the other things, though, we have to do is think in a different way about traffic. We've got plenty of roads. The problem is there are too many people who want to use them at exactly the same time, which is a short hour or so period in the morning and the afternoon. So if we can get employers to shift some of their hours so that people are going to work at different times, we could relieve a lot of that traffic pressure. But it's just only a few hours a day that's causing the problems in the people's perception of our traffic problem increase.
Thank you.
Yeah. Carol? Yeah, I've got a couple of questions that have to do with how you are translating the plans into the implementation phase. One of them has to do with the ways in which you work with developers when they come to the town for approval of various projects. Are you anticipating changing at all? I mean, I know for some of the larger projects right now, the town requires the entire plan to be presented at once. If you're phasing projects, you need to have all the infrastructure in place. And, you know, if we're looking for larger, more dense projects, we hear that sometimes the developers can't necessarily afford to do all of that at once. Are you looking at, I assume there are conflicting needs and reasons to do it each way. What, do you have thoughts in terms of...
I think the change plan? In zoning will change some of the approaches to how development takes place. We've used a little bit in recent years the planned development zone approach, where if there's a rezoning, we sit down with a developer and work out how it's going to work. And it's a give and take as to what's going to happen there. That is only feasible, though, under rezoning. Under current zoning, yes, we're locked into a very rigid system. So the new zoning, we think, will give a lot more flexibility, and so we'll be able to work things out. But I'm not sure that being able to complete the entire project will be effective an awful lot, because what we're trying to avoid is a developer starting on a project, getting halfway through it, and then all of a sudden they can't finish it off. That's exactly what has happened in an infill project at Eastwood Commons. That was supposed to have been a much larger project, but Eastwood Commons, part of it got built, the rest of it then didn't get built, and now Cornell owns the land, and they're proposing it as an infill development. So that's an example of a project that should have been much better completed, but never was. So, you know, these are the problems you run into, and we have problems with safety. I mean, the fire department requires a certain ability to get in and out of these places, and that might mean completing the entire road and not just a dead-end road. So, yeah, these are difficult questions that... But I don't think that will have a big impact with our redevelopment or rezoning.
Okay. And then how is it going so far with the stream setback ordinance? That one is in the work.
Oh, yeah. That's been in place for quite some time. We've had no major issues with it. But on the other hand, we haven't had any major development right next to it either, or within the boundaries. So the proof of the pudding will be when a developer wants to develop closer to a stream than the stream setback law allows.
Yeah. Thanks.
Anything else? Thanks again, Herb. Great presentation, and it sounds like it really is reflective of the community values, and we appreciate hearing about it. Thanks for your time. All right, for my report, I just want to take a moment and think about Judy Dietz, who passed away yesterday. Somebody who was, I think, younger than I am.
She's been sick.
Yeah. Yes. She and her husband Jerry have been sort of pillars of the community in the sense of sort of almost every nonprofit you can think of. One or both of them has been involved in, and you know, a leading force. The obituary in this morning's paper probably wasn't even a complete story of Judy's contributions to this community.
So she will definitely be missed. The service is tomorrow at 1:30 at Temple Bethel. So I wonder if we could just take a moment to think about Judy and her family and what service really means. Thank you. I'd like to report on the NYSAC meeting, fall conference, fall seminar last week. Peter and I were there for several days. Frank was up there for a part of the time. And if you know, either of you wants to add something in, that'd be most welcome. the sessions were in Syracuse, so it was blessedly close to home this time. There are a number of sessions there was a session on wind farms. I didn't get to go to that, but I know Jay Franklin was also at the meeting, and I believe he went to that. I co-led a workshop on fracking with Chemung County Executive Tom Santulli. He talked about the local costs of fracking. Don't look so shocked, Pam. Yes. Yes, it was, you know, all hands across the water and all that. Yes.
Hands across the abyss.
Well, listen, I think that we found some things that we agree on, and mainly that if this comes to New York State, the taxpayers better not subsidize it. So he has done, has put in a considerable amount of staff time with something we've struggled with, which is what are the local costs going to be? What kind of staffing is going to be needed in the health department? What kind of training is going to be needed with local first responders? And by the way, they have been trained, and they are sort of available to train other other local forces if we should be interested in that kind of preparation. He's got a very interesting strategy on the whole industry, which is that Tom's vision, of course, is a county executive, so it's a different form of government. He's really leading the charge that will say there will be a single point of entry for gas drillers in Chemung County. They won't go to Dryden and then Newfield. They'll all come through a single office, sort of run by the county. And it sounds like that there's merit to that. So the resources will be centralized, and it'll be a little bit more consistent about how people will have to operate in Chemung County. He's also got more. He's well ahead of where we are in terms of collaboration among highway departments. And I think a couple years ago, Joe, you know a little bit about this, got a shared services grant to really bring a lot of highway operations more closely together. So that's the foundation on which the road use agreements they're working on are built. So they're using Delta, and I think the county will be treated as a whole in one consistent way. So there are a lot of differences compared to where Tompkins County is, obviously. But at any rate, it was very interesting, and I've got the... I can get the PowerPoint if anybody's interested in that. I think if this happens, certainly the work that they've done, we should look at that in detail and try to use that as a checklist and see if we've addressed the issues that they've considered. They have spent a couple hundred thousand dollars of county money already on staff time doing that sort of thing, preparing those that work. And, you know, that's a decision that they've made. I think we would make a different decision, or have made a different decision. My part of the workshop really was thanks to Carol on the Land Use and Assessment Subcommittee of the TCOG Gas Drilling Task Force. I started with Carol's PowerPoint, and I had to shorten it. So I made some alterations, but the basic idea being I sort of outlined the taxation issues that we have with the ad valorem tax as it is, what the proposed severance tax might look like and ought to look like, as well as what kind of regimen of fees should we recommend should be included if gas drilling were to come. So it was great thanks to Carol and the subcommittee that I was able to do that. And as it turned out, Tom had to go to another meeting, so he was only there for the first 20 minutes, and then I had the whole rest of the time. So, but his side, I will say, had their own proponents, so, you know, it was a lively discussion. It was very interesting. And on Thursday morning, I was moderator for, which is much less intense, moderator for a session on the Medicaid administrative takeover by New York State. Judy Arnold, who's the Department of Health, State Department of Health director for the takeover, was presented where New York State is in terms of what functions are being taken over now, what functions they're working on to take over in 2013 and beyond. And then two commissioners who are in the sort of in the middle of this process, Mike Fitzgerald from Madison County and Kyra Pospisil from, I can't remember which county, maybe Delaware, were also there. No, I'm sorry, Greene County. And described their process and what kinds of things they are interested in maintaining within the county and which functions they would be happy to have the state take over. I will tell you, the state has issued a statement of intent or a statement of interest that they've asked every commissioner to respond to, a brief survey, what functions, just to say, which functions are you interested in maintaining in your county, either short-term or long-term? And before I went to the conference, I checked with Patricia Carey. She responded to that survey saying, Tompkins County would like to maintain functions locally, short-term and long-term, basically in all the areas that are being considered. This is non-binding. This is not any sort of a firm commitment. But she was saying that she, until she really knows exactly how the state's going to do this, how they're going to manage each of these functions, and until she knows how that will affect our clients, she doesn't want to let go of anything, basically. And I believe the intention is if we are maintaining the function, we would be contracted, there'd be additional reimbursement, so it's not like we would continue to do things and not be paid for it. But that's all to be decided farther down the road. But it's been very interesting. There's a whole range of some counties saying, please take it all now, as soon as you can, all the way to, we're not the only county, a number of counties that have said, we want to stay involved. So the state is working its way through that whole puzzle, and I have a lot of confidence in the process that they've put together. They're being very, it's a very two-way, you know, collaborative approach between commissioners and the State Department, and they're working very hard on it. So those are some of the highlights that I would offer to you. Peter or Frank, did you want to comment on any part of the conference that you're at?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Thanks, Martha. I was involved in the session that dealt with the Farm Bill and lack of the Farm Bill. Commissioner Darrell Albertine was at our session. He was one of the speakers, along with Julie Juarez, who is the education coordinator for Farm Bureau. The major concern is that with the emphasis on agriculture throughout the state and the governor's push, particularly with the yogurt issue, the lack of the Farm Bill and the subsidies is very, very serious. The industries that are affected are big time. We've been working with, and these two folks have been working with their counterparts in Washington. Senator Gillibrand has been very effective on the Agricultural Committee at the federal level. And there's a lot of concern that if this doesn't get back in gear, we're going to take a major hit. Agriculture is still the largest industry in the state, and there's a major concern that people that are associated with it will suffer job losses plus the economic impact, because it goes well beyond just cows in the field or horses in the barn. There's a lot of people who are going to have there's going to be a negative effect. We got into discussion about, you remember that whole discussion about TMDLs and the Chesapeake? We talked about it at the planning committee. There's a concern, a positive interest in that the feds may be, through the EPA, easing some of the requirements, not because they're not important, but because they've discovered in Delaware that the water going into the Chesapeake is not as bad as people thought it was. And there's going to be a new study on that, and that possibly could come through the Farm Bill as well. The third item was the impact on food stamps. Because of the lack of the Farm Bill, there could be a serious impact, and we talked about this. I've already talked to Joe about it. We may be asked to pick up some of the tab, even though the stamps themselves are purchased by the feds. The administration of the program is totally local with every single county. And without the Farm Bill and the subsidy that it provides, there could be a real serious hit. They're talking about putting a temporary bill in place that'll carry through at least until February. Senator Gillibrand is lukewarm on that. You know, it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick, but it's not what everybody's looking for. So there's some serious concerns about it. The other item, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, but Joe, you're going to be embarrassed. Nick Pirro said to say hello. He said he's got something hidden in his desk that you left behind.
Is that right?
So he wants to talk to you.
I thought I'd put it in one of my drawers here, but I guess not.
Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Peter, did you want to share anything?
No, I think your report was very complete.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, County Administrator Joe Mariano.
I have no report tonight. I thought you liked my reports.
Well, there goes Herb. That's all Herb was waiting for.
Herb just left.
Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
No report.
David Squire, Finance Director.
Wait a second. We might have questions for these people.
Too late.
Well, I have to advise that we were unsuccessful in our defense of our golf title.
We were.
Last Friday. So, but I did pass out a sales tax report that is positive. It's not very dynamic. We had 0.7% growth in the month of August, but we're still 3.38% ahead year-to-date, which bodes well for this year as well as a foundation for a 2013 budget. And also wanted to advise that we did complete the transaction to refinance our energy performance contract. We paid off Bank of America, and now we have the energy performance contract is with J.P. Morgan Chase. And that's my report.
Thank you. David, Frank.
Thanks, Martha. David, we've been going through the county budget little by little, and a question I had was what's the status of our Gatsby review and listing the assets of the county?
Well, as you all were discussing about the road conditions and how do you measure, it's the one positive thing that I can see that they've changed accounting. Through our annual financial report, you can actually measure whether we had a debt increase in our infrastructure, because we measure depreciation every year of our infrastructure, and then we have additions. And in 2012, we had a positive increase in the infrastructure. The year before, it was basically a slight decline, but it's a crude measurement, because When you build the road, like Ellis Hollow Road goes on, it's at its cost. It's depreciated over 20 years, and therefore, so if it's a $3 million project and you have to depreciate it, you have to add the next year put in place to offset that depreciation, or you'll have a decline. And we had the benefit of capitalizing the health department building last year. We had Warren Road being fully capitalized. Most of Ellis Hollow was fully capitalized. So, and last year was the last year we had our annual, the remnants of our annual road catch-up program was added. So it is a crude measure to see if we're keeping up.
But that one comment, that's had a positive effect on our bond rating.
Well, it's one thing they can look at and saying, well, you're not keeping up. You're depreciating more than you're investing. So that's an important fact.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, Adulie.
Is there an easy to read list of our assets and their value?
An easy to it's a big spreadsheet, and basically what happens is when you complete a project, then you add the total value. You have to, if the project's not complete, it's called construction in progress. It goes into one bucket that's not depreciated. Then it gets converted into infrastructure when the project's completed, and then you start depreciating it. And in some cases, it's identified by a particular name of a project. In other cases, like pretty much in highway, traditionally, it's been the aggregate investment during the year because, like, most of the CHIPS money can be identified as permanent improvements because in order to qualify, the CHIPS money has to be certified to being greater than 5 years of life usefulness. A building is definitely set up as an individual category, but you know, airport infrastructure is pretty much airport infrastructure. It doesn't break out whether it's an apron or a runway.
I'd like to see it sometime, but that means going to visit you, or is there a copy at the legislative
office? No, it's on the computer. It's not. It's kind of unwieldy to print out.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. Are there any resolutions, Jim?
Martha, it may be an appropriate time. Let me just announce that the search committee is membership is completed, and we will be having our first meeting within the next few weeks and start the search for the director of finance. Let me just say who they are. Blixey Tage from TC3. John Saunders from the trust company, Mike Stamm from TCAD. From the ledge, Martha, Leslyn Dooley, Brian, Mike, and myself. And we will do a wide and varied search, and David will be along on the side as an advisor and offering advice.
And Joe is part of that committee as well?
And Joe, of course.
Thanks very much, Jim. I'm glad that committee's in place. All right, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim?
I have one, approval of a proposal to develop and implement the New York Council of Humanities Reading and Discussion Program to strengthen a diversity conversation in the county workplace.
That's in your red folders. That's the motion to add that. Second? Leslyn seconds that. Julie?
I have a question. The way this seems to be worded, it seems as though it should be part of the 2013 budget discussion.
Well, tonight
it's $240, Julie.
I know what it is, but
we're only talking about whether to add this to the agenda
right.
Tonight.
Well,
and
I
if that's a concern,
to vote for or against, that's why we're asking.
Okay, that's up to you. All in favor of adding this to the agenda tonight, please raise your hand. Any opposed?
Well, I didn't get my question answered.
Okay, that is 13 to 1. So that's on the agenda for later. Carol, I think you should take A, right?
Yeah, you can take A off the agenda.
Okay. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. So I will read the titles. If anything, if you want anything pulled off, just let me know. Resolution B, ID 3640, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS companies for construction observation and administration services in connection with runway 1432 centerline joint repair, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, ID 3637, award of bid, new snow removal equipment, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution D, ID 3609, authorization to enter into a five-year lease agreement. What, off? Okay. Resolution E, 3625, award of tourism partner awards. Resolution F, ID 3624, acceptance of strategic tourism plan developed by the Strategic Tourism Planning Board. Resolution G, 3646.
Off, please.
Resolution H, ID 3629, acceptance of grant from the fiscal year 2012 Drug-Free Communities DFC Support Program for mentoring by the Community Coalition for Healthy Youth of the Schuyler County Commission on Underage Drinking and Drugs.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
In an effort not to have to pull it off for discussion, could I offer some clarification on the title?
I think it needs to come off consent.
Okay, then take it.
We're going to change it. Okay. So that's off. Resolution I, 3659, Budget Adjustments Office for the Aging. And I have two appointments for consent agenda. Roy Trask, Jr. for the Ag and Farmland Protection Board and Timothy Scott for the Tompkins County Public Library Board. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Carol moves. Frank seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Those are unanimously passed. All right, now, everybody sitting there in the back wonders which ones I'm going to do first. I would like to go to the Planning Committee, Will, and without doing your report, would you go through through J, K, and L? I think I'm looking at the length of time some of these are going to take, so I think that would help our staff out if we start with J.
Okay, so I will move Resolution J, which is approving the issuance by Tompkins County Developing Corporation of up to $10 million aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds for Kendall of Ithaca, Inc. Project Series 2012. And I so move.
Okay, seconded by Pat. Discussion? Dooley.
Well, I'll ask my usual kind of question in line 10. It's the end of the first whereas, which explains what we're doing. I would love to add some language that says why. I'd like to insert for purposes of refinancing outstanding bonds at a lower rate of interest.
I would first ask David, is there an issue if the language is changed? Or Jonathan, if there's an issue?
It's Jonathan. Yeah.
If the language is changed.
There usually is, but what was the exact wording you wanted to add?
I just wanted to say why we were doing this. It's for purposes of refinancing outstanding bonds at a lower rate of interest.
I mean, I recommend not adding these, changing them at the last minute, because these are approved by bond council, and probably it wouldn't make a difference, but it might, and I don't see anything gained by doing that.
Well, then, could I ask in the future that when bond council prepares one of these, language be added to say why we're doing what we're doing?
Okay. Heather Filiberto from TCAD is here. If you do you want to comment or just make a note that, please.
Having discussed preliminary changes to these kinds of resolutions with our bond council, I think it would be perfectly fine to add that bit of language in there, and I will certainly take the message back and ask that they do that in the future.
Okay, thank you, Heather. So I have to ask if that's friendly to Will and Pat. Did you second it?
Pat.
Yeah. If Heather's comfortable, I would accept that as friendly.
And Pat? Okay, so do we... Kathy, Michelle, do you have what Dooley has said? Okay, Carol?
Not to be difficult, but it seems to me that we've already described what this is for in line 6. So if you were going to add that wording, to assist in the financing of a certain project as defined below for the benefit of Kendall at Ithaca,
that if you were going to add that wording, it would be to assist in the financing at a lower level of a certain project.
Okay.
Otherwise, you've got two separate places in the same whereas, in the same sentence that say for the purpose of. But this is why this needs to be done in advance, I think.
Jim?
I want to call the question, please.
Okay. Is there a second to call in the question? Second by Brian. So this is just on ending debate. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11 opposed? Two. So it passes 11 to 2. We're ready to vote on the Resolution J with that language added because it was accepted as friendly. All in favor of Resolution J, please raise your hand. Opposed? That passes 12 to 2. We have 14 people here.
Can I just make one point? The bond council that did this for TCAD is not the same bond council that the county uses.
Okay.
No, so I'm just saying if you telling them they're different bond council.
Okay. So that passes 12 to 2. Thank you very much, Heather. Okay. Go ahead, Will. I guess go through the next two again.
Okay. Resolution K, which is making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number something of 2012. And this is relating to folks, this is going to be relating actually to the following resolution, which we will tell you more about. And I so move.
Second by Dooley.
This is true.
I want to speak on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I want to ask a question. Since we act on these before, you have to refer to something coming. I want to suggest changing the first line to say, whereas by resolution number such and such, the county proposes to allocate funding, since we'll be acting on that second.
That would make sense to me. So it seemed awkward the way it was written.
All right. Anything else? With that change, all in favor of resolution K, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
And finally, resolution L, which is appropriated funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for natural, scenic, and recreational resource protection for the Lykins property in a natural features focus area, and pending budget, capital, and personnel committee action. And I so move.
Seconded by Pam. Discussion. All right. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Oh, I was supposed to do a short form roll call, right? Okay. Let's do that again.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? Okay, that is unanimous. All right. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Will. We'll come back for your report.
Thank you.
I think, Jim Dennis, you have Resolution M that would help Paula go home, right? Paula, you're waiting for M?
Q.
You're just waiting for Q. Is that the end? You're waiting for WDIC. Okay. All right, let's go to Q.
Q, approval of proposal to develop and implement the New York Council for the Managed Reading and Discussion Program to strengthen the diversity conversation in the county workplace. I would move that.
Seconded by Will Eslin. Okay, and there's a document on your desk related to this. Leslin, do you want to introduce this a little bit?
I had a lot of apologies since this has been one of Paula's projects out of WDIC.
Okay.
I will not steal her thunder.
Thank you. Well, as Martha just said, there is a proposal that's on your desk. It's a three-pager, but it tries to give as much of the purpose of these discussions as well as some background. We are following a design, a format that is put out by the New York State Council on the Humanities. We do have a little past history in being engaged in one of their programs. We did something a year ago with the Day of Remembrance for 9/11. And so we're sort of building upon that design and that relationship that we've established with the council. And we also looked at some of the comments that came through the climate survey, where we know that staff are interested in different types of learning opportunities. And in fact, the term strengthening the conversation came directly from those comments. So this is a step forward in making that happen. And we are proposing to use this design first as a pilot, and hoping that we get some positive response from our initial participants, that maybe this is something that we can continue on in the future.
Thank you very much, Paula. Dooley?
Having read the accompanying memo, I would ask that the third whereas be expanded to say a reading and discussion program has been proposed by the Department of County Administration. If that's correct. And in the resolved, I feel uncomfortable saying the county legislature hereby approves the reading and discussion program proposal in its entirety if it said we approve the reading and discussion program proposal concept. I would be fine with that, because the next resolved, I think, should say further that funds for a pilot of this project in the amount of $240 is available or is included in the department budget. I don't know where it is.
Okay, let's do two. Let's break those in two. On the third whereas, is that friendly to the mover and seconder to add by the Department of County Administration?
Well, I'm...
Yes. Yeah.
It would be fine with me, except part of my interest is also making sure that in there... never mind. I see it.
WDIC is later.
So, is that time with you?
Yes.
Jim?
Yeah, if it accomplishes what we want to accomplish.
Okay, I guess that's a yes. Now, Dooley, the other one, you've got a couple of other changes.
In the final resolve, what we're being asked to do is okay $240 for a pilot to see
pilot.
How it goes.
That's fine.
And so I wanted to insert further that funds for a pilot of this project in the amount of $240.
It's fine with me.
And what I don't know is where that money is. It's already in the budget?
It's in the county administrator's budget, or Leslie and I are going to split the cost of it.
Well, should it then just say is available in the county administration budget instead of will be made available? I wasn't sure where it exists.
I don't know how much more clear it can
from
be.
From the county administration
county
department
administration
budget?
County administration department budget.
I'm pretty sure they know where to go. All right, so the adding a pilot of this project is acceptable to the mover and seconder. All right.
And the other one was in the first resolve where it says we approve the program proposal in its entirety. As I read it, it seems like a concept which is being piloted, and if that goes well, then we will go forward. So I'm uncomfortable with the in its entirety. I'd like
it's
to drop
it's a pilot,
that.
It's a concept, it's fine with me.
What's the phrase to change here? What are we
just
saying?
Just drop in its entirety is okay.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah.
Lessons? Okay.
That's fine.
Dropping it's in its entirety. Any other discussion, Carol?
Yeah, I have a question. So are we going to be giving people release time from work to participate in this? At what time of the day will the sessions be held?
We would handle this just like any other training opportunity that we offer to staff.
Okay, and do we have a scholar facilitator in mind?
We will be in the process of finding that. One of the things was to get this program approved so that I could go out and
do that.
I do jokingly say that in this town it'd be really hard to find that scholar, but I think we're gonna work on it.
Okay. And it might be good to keep some extra copies of the book available, even for people who can't come on that schedule, or if there are legislators who would like to follow along with the book, that might be.
Well, let me just say that part of this format is that the books are provided by the council. And our budget right now is just for the pilot piece.
Oh, right.
Okay, well, I would just like to hear later exactly what the book is, the citation for the book, so that maybe we can...
Oh, surely, and actually you can actually Google the book on places like Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and things like that, and you can find the information there as well.
All right, ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution Q, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Paula.
Thank you, Walter.
Okay. And I would like to ask Peter Stein to take Resolution N, and then we'll finally get to the sheriff.
Okay. Resolution N. Let's see. I've got the copy that was passed out. That was attached to the.
N is about the Department of Emergency Response.
Yeah, right. I've got N that was accompanied the agenda when I got it in the mail. And then I have a yellow one on the table, and as near as I can tell, they're exactly the same. Is there some difference?
No, that just means you're the mover. That's all that means.
You're the chair.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. So anyway, the resolution is authorization for Tompkins County through the Department of Emergency Response to partner in Interoperable Communications Alliance. And I'd like to move that.
Second by Leslin. Mike.
I'm really pleased to hear that we're going ahead with this. Interoperability and communications with our regional counties is so important. There's a real problem that we have, particularly from our outlying police departments.
Thank you, Mike.
I can second what Mike says. That has been a problem that I've heard discussed at ECROC time and time again. I think this is important.
I'll third it.
The resolution needs to have a word changed in line 6. It's a memorandum of agreement, not a memorandum of understanding. It's the memorandum of agreement dated, whatever it says, January 11, 2010. I spoke with Lee Shurtleff about this. He told me that at least 2 counties have already acted on this, and he thinks 2 others may have by now, so we may not be the 3rd, we may be the 5th. And he acknowledges that there are errors in the body of the document, the memorandum of agreement. But as Jonathan Wood advised me, we have to sign exactly the same thing as others did in order for us to be part of the agreement. So much as it hurts me to sign something that I know has missing words and so forth, I will support this. And Lee also told me that at one of the early meetings of the group, he expects that the document will be revisited to correct some of these things. So, just sharing that.
I'd like to share your changes with Lee. Anything else? Pat?
Do we expect that in the future, as this gets up and running, that there will be costs associated with it?
Lee, do you want to answer the question?
The main point in bringing this forward is to be able to partner with other counties to seek grant funding. So I'm hoping to create revenue with this, not an expense, or offsetting revenue through partnerships with other counties or through consortium regional agreements. And for those of you that will remember the old partnerships we'd worked on with the state of New York, the SWIN program, which we lovingly call us the son of SWIN, with the grant funding that's being made available through interoperable communications funds at the statewide level, anything that we might have a chance to apply for and receive funding to enhance interoperable communications will be dependent upon partnerships between at least 2 counties and preferably by the state through regional consortiums such as this.
Okay.
I understand that you'll be going for the grant funding, and I think that this is actually a very, very good thing. I'm very much in support of it. I'm thinking more in terms of perhaps administrative costs, but maybe you don't think there will be. I just want to make sure that if we pass this, that it has sufficient support with it to do what we're trying to do. But if you feel that it does, then I'm fine with it.
I think it does. Between the communications offices in each county, there should be sufficient staff support.
Okay.
And one of the other advantages is working with the regional planning board as well as our own local ones as these grants occur.
Good. I saw Frank, Dooley, and Brian.
Thanks, Martha. Lee, some of us remember SWIN, and we remember that, to the best of my recollection, we invested a lot of county funds in developing that communication system, and we're left pretty short by the state because they never came through. My recollection is there were hundreds of thousands of dollars that we expected to receive, and we never got a nickel. I think this is great to partner with other counties because out where we are, out where I am, it's important to have that kind of communication, regardless of whether we get any money from the state or not. I think it's a good gesture within the Southern Tier region. What's the probability that we will get anything from the state?
I think over time it's quite high, and I don't want to drag this out too long, but just to give you an idea that last year there was a first round of grant funding that came from the surcharge money, as we talked about last night, that was in the $20 million range. This cycle has been raised to $36 million, and eventually it's anticipated there will be an ongoing appropriation from the legislature and the state budget for $75 million annually here on out to fund interoperable communications programs. And the approach is to revisit the SWIN concept and build from the local level upward so that the key to it is linking adjacent counties and regions together to effectuate that interoperability across the state and to identify common frequencies that can be had in the different frequency bands. And I think it's very likely that we will see funding of projects, maybe not this year, but over a period of time as they lay this out across the statewide level. I'm hopeful that they'll rethink the, and there's certainly a number of us that are encouraging them to rethink how they promote this grant program. Initially, it's just an amount that's out there every year that's competitively sought by each county. And you've kind of got a one-shot deal that is occurring, similar to some of the federal grants that we see that come down. And I'm hopeful that they'll be able to make some long-term commitments that would support a county's being able to bond a project and anticipate a smaller amount of money each year for several years, or even support maintenance of the system. And part of this is encouraging the state agencies to also partner onto our facilities and possibly be funded through that. So I'm very strongly encouraged that if we can put together something that rolls in with other counties and into the statewide communications plan, that we will see some return on those dollars that were invested.
Okay, Dooley, then Brian, then Carol, and Peter.
I was trying to understand what was intended by the final resolve. It sounds as though we're giving blanket permission to sign anything in the future. The county administrator will authorize the director to do that. And since this agreement, I think, came to us without having benefit of our county attorneys having a chance to look at it, I would like to make sure that doesn't automatically follow for every other agreement. I think when there are routine contracts, that it's not necessary for Jonathan to see them, but for something that's new like this, I think it would be good to give him an opportunity to review it. So is that more or less your understanding, Joe, of how it would work?
Yeah, and that would be our understanding and our commitment that we would do that.
Okay. I don't think everything has to come to us, but I wanted to make sure that someone else got to look at it.
Brian?
I think everybody agrees that this concept is needed and something we should do. In speaking about this in public safety, what I took away from this is nothing other than authorizing our representative, which in this case is Lee, to begin the discussion with these other counties about the possibility of forming this alliance. And if down the road it would appear as though what we need to kick in for funding, you know, if the state backs out of any funding or what have you, part of the bylaws, the proposed bylaws that they have given us, has in the dissolution clause, we can opt out of this anytime we want. So all it's really doing is allowing him to begin the discussion, at least from what I see. Obviously, if they're, Dooley, I understand what you're saying in terms of you may be able to construe this as giving Lee carte blanche to sign any agreements and funding and so forth, but I don't believe that to be the case. He would definitely have to come back to us for any funding.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Carol?
Yeah, I was going to try to get at the same concerns. I think this, we're all expressing some concern in the once bitten, twice shy category, or the son of swim said it all. In our experience, these kind of grants, when they're made available, particularly for the communications programs, have required a substantial local match in the past. And so I guess that's a concern. Are you anticipating a local match when it gets to that stage?
There may be, there may not. Under the program I described earlier, there is no local match to it, but there are some that come along that do require. And there may be a maintenance obligation that you would pick up along the way. But one of the things, let me just point out, in addition to this, this is a working group that would get us started in the Southern Tier. But Joe is certainly familiar with the Onondaga Consortium that has been operating for some time. We've got concerns where we need to be able to extend our communications so we can talk from this county to Upstate Medical Center to our regional medical control. And the purpose in that last part of this is to facilitate those conversations and partnerships to further occur. But should we have grant funding come in, or should there be a fiscal obligation? Very clearly, that comes back to the board to accept those funds and to direct their spending. We've got six different directions we could go to link with other counties, four of whom are in totally different regions than are within this document. So we need that flexibility to be able to craft those conversations and partnerships as well.
So one of the concerns is that I'm hearing is that often when these things come back to us at the stage where it's ready to go for funding, the eventual funding, the grant proposal's already been written, everybody else has already signed on, and we're being asked then to accept something that a lot of work has been done on already, and then we have to come up with funding. So I don't know if it's a way to write into this that...
Well, I think policy dictates that when we make
on something like that, that it come back to us as you're thinking about doing it.
I think our policy does dictate, though, that we inform our committee that we are seeking a grant when those occur. So there is communication that's happening as that is developed.
And I think, as for example, in Resolution G, which we have to go back to, there is no local match. I don't think, in fact, most of these do have a local match. So, but we take those one at a time. This is just an agreement to work together, and I hope we're ready to vote. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I had Peter down too.
I'm just getting the impression that we're missing the forest for the trees. This is really important. The police chief in Dryden says she can't communicate with an emergency vehicle on the other side of the boundary, and that's bad, okay? That's really bad, and this is an attempt to work together on something that we can't afford to do by ourselves. And I think there may be some of these little risks, but since we can opt out at any time, if we find the thing is too burdensome, then we can get out of it. But I think when working with other people, we have to not take the position that it's got to be the way that we write it that we do. So I think we just ought to approve it.
Okay, ready to vote? Yes. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So you have G. Before Lee goes home, sorry, Lee, you have G that was pulled off consent, Peter.
Oh, yeah, G that's pulled off the consent. I have an important change to make.
Why don't you move it first?
Oh, yeah, right. I'd like to move authorization to expect to accept Homeland Security grants, Department of Energy response.
Seconded by Dave.
And there was a mistake in the arithmetic, but the item that reads, what is it? $78,262 should read $78,292. 32.
Okay.
You sure of that?
That would make the math work. 78,232, which...
78,232.
As I read this, that isn't even in the isn't even in the resolution, right, Kathy?
It is. Line 28.
It's the note at the bottom. So, but it's good to have it right. Okay.
All right.
With that change.
With that change, I'd like to move the motion.
Well, it's been moved and seconded by David. Any discussion? All in favor of Resolution G, please raise your hand. Opposed. Let no one think we got the math wrong. All right. Now, Ken, I'm sorry. We usually take a break about this time, and I suspect that there will be a fair amount of discussion on Resolution P, and we also have, while you're here, Resolution O on the vehicle. So I would like to ask for a seven-minute break.
Let Ken? Oh, no, I guess Ken.
He's waiting for the longer one, too.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Right? So if we, I would like you back in your seats, please, at 8:25. Thank you very much. One recess.